The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're diving into a book that honestly really changes how you think about yourself. It's Carl Sagan's 1977 masterpiece, The Dragons of Eden, Speculations on the Evolution of Human Intelligence.
Absolutely. And it's so much more than just a science book, isn't it? It's this incredible synthesis. Our goal today really is to unpack how Sagan argued that, you know, human consciousness, our weird behaviors, even our biggest achievements, they aren't just random gifts. They're traceable products of this long, kind of messy, but totally spectacular evolutionary journey.
It feels like it tackles that fundamental question. How did we become us? How can a species write poetry and wage war? Sagan makes you see your own brain as like a living museum.
Artifact.
A living artifact, yeah. Holding the history of life itself. It's quite a concept. But maybe we should start with Sagan himself. Why an astronomer writing about the human brain seems a bit unusual, right? That's the interesting part. Carl Sagan, well, everyone knows Cosmos. He lived from 1934 to 1996, probably the most famous science communicator of the 20th century. Hugely important in NASA missions, Mariner, Viking, Voyager. Mm-hmm. And a brilliant scientist, won the Pulitzer for this book, actually.
But being an astronomer, thinking about cosmology, that gave him this unique viewpoint, didn't it? He was used to thinking in deep time, billions of years, not just human lifespans.
Exactly. So he could see human intelligence not as this isolated miracle happening just on Earth,
but as something incredibly recent, almost like a fragile experiment in the grand scheme of the universe.
And he wrote beautifully. That Pulitzer wasn't just for the science, it was for the prose, that sense of wonder, that humanism, plus, you know, his work on SETI.
The search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yeah, that meant he spent a lot of time trying to define what intelligence even is, which is, well, kind of the perfect background for analyzing our own minds.
Okay, so let's dive into the book itself. The main idea, the premise, is pretty straightforward, but wow, powerful. He basically invites us to understand our own minds by putting them back into their evolutionary story.
And he starts with scale, right? That famous cosmic calendar.
Ah, yes. The cosmic calendar. It's designed to be humbling. He compresses the entire 13 billion year history of the universe into a single calendar year. Big bang on January 1st.
So where do humans show up? Late December.
Very late. The first humans. Around 10:30 p.m. on December 31st.
Wow.
And get this. All of recorded human history, everything from ancient Sumeria to, you know, us talking right now, it all fits into the final 10 seconds of December 31st.
10 seconds. That really frames our intelligence as, well, brand new.
Yeah.
And maybe a bit precarious.
Exactly. Volatile and experimental. And that leads us straight to the core idea of the book, the triune brain model.
The three-part brain.
Yeah, Sagan argued our brain basically evolved in three layers stacked on top of each other, like geological strata, but for consciousness, each layer reflecting an earlier stage of life.
And the conflict between these layers, that's the key.
That's what he argues defines the human condition. So many of our psychological struggles, our social conflicts, they come from these different parts of the brain pulling in different directions. The book is really about how the cosmos, through evolution, became self-aware. It's a story about information, moving from genes to neurons.
Okay, let's break down those layers. Sagan popularized this idea from neuroscientist Paul MacLean. At the very bottom, the oldest part, the reptilian complex, or R complex.
Right. Think of it as the lizard brain, the absolute core managing basic survival. Aggression, territoriality, ritualistic behavior.
Ritualistic? Like how?
Well, think about dominance hierarchies, rigid social protocols, maybe even things like our daily commute patterns, or how intensely tribal we can get about sports teams. It's that automatic, instinctual part. Sagan called it the dragon within.
The dragon within. That sounds slightly ominous. But hang on, this whole three-layered brain thing, isn't it seen as a bit, well, oversimplified by neuroscientists today?
That's a really fair point. Modern neuroscience sees it as much more interconnected. The functions are distinct, sure, but the anatomical layers aren't quite so neat.
Okay.
But Sagan used it brilliantly as a metaphor, a way to understand our behavior. He argued these ancient programs, these reptilian drives, they're still running. Even if they're tangled up with the newer systems, it helps explain why we do things that seem irrational sometimes.
Gotcha. So layered on top of that R complex, what's next?
The limbic system. This is more the early mammal brain. And this layer brought something new. Feelings. Real emotions.
Ah, okay. So this is where love, fear, joy, sadness come in.
Exactly. And crucial things like parental care, social bonding. This is what allows for complex social groups, empathy, valuing relationships beyond just who's the boss. This is where we start getting really social creatures.
And then the final layer, the big one on top.
The neocortex.
Yeah.
The crowning glory, you could say.
Yeah.
Massively expanded in humans. This is where we get language, abstract thought, reason, planning for the future, self-awareness.
And Sagan uses that Plato analogy, right?
Sure,
the chariot.
Yes. It's perfect. The neocortex is the charioteer holding the reins. But it's trying to control these two incredibly powerful horses,
yeah.
The instinctive R complex and the emotional limbic system.
So that internal argument you have, like,
yeah.
Should I yell at that driver or take a deep breath? That's the sound of the charioteer wrestling with the horses.
Pretty much. It's the sound of these different evolutionary time clocks trying and often failing to sync up smoothly.
And this connects to how we store information too, right? Moving beyond just genes.
Definitely. Genes are fantastic for long-term storage, like time-tested survival plans passed down generations. But the brain, especially the neocortex, offers this incredibly flexible, fast storage. We're talking trillions of bits. It lets us learn and adapt within our own lifetime. That shift is the basis of advanced intelligence.
And Sagan connects this shift, this dawning self-awareness, to mythology, specifically the fall from Eden.
Yeah, it's a fascinating idea. He suggests that the story of the fall isn't literal history, obviously, but maybe a kind of metaphorical echo of this huge evolutionary leap.
So the innocence before the fall is like living purely by instinct and emotion, driven by the R-complex and limbic system.
Uh-huh. And then suddenly, boom, the neocortex kicks in, bringing self-awareness. But with that awareness comes this heavy burden, knowing you're going to die, the price of consciousness.
And who offers the fruit of knowledge in the story?
The serpent, a reptile. Sagan points out that's a pretty potent symbol for that ancient R complex, nudging us towards a kind of knowledge that also brings deep anxiety.
He also spends time challenging the idea that humans are totally unique, especially with language. He talks about animal intelligence like Washu the chimpanzee.
Right, Washu. She learned American Sign Language, ASL. But the really amazing thing wasn't just that she could make signs. It was that she started combining them in new ways.
Like the water bird example.
Exactly. She saw a swan, something she'd never been taught the sign for, and she spontaneously signed water and bird. That shows symbolic thinking, abstraction, stuff we used to think only humans could do.
So if our brain is layered like this, with this dragon inside, do we ever kind of regress? Go back to that more primal state? Sagan had a theory about dreams, didn't he?
He did. It's a really compelling thought.
Mm-hmm.
His idea was that during REM sleep, our conscious analytical neocortex basically goes offline. It checks out for the night.
Leaving the older parts in charge.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The R complex and the limbic system become much more active, running the show without the usual supervisor.
Which would explain why dreams are often so weird and illogical and full of those classic fears falling, being chased.
Yeah, flying. It's like the dragon within gets to play out these ancient scripts, a nightly trip back to what Sagan called a dim Eden.
And even within the neocortex itself, there's specialization, the two hemispheres.
Right. He talks about the left hemisphere as being logical, sequential, analytical. He called it the Apollo side. And the right hemisphere being more about intuition, seeing the big picture, creativity, the Dionysus side.
Apollo and Dionysus. And he stresses that real genius needs both working together.
Absolutely. But you raise a good point. Why do we often seem to prize the analytical left brain so much more in, say, business or even sometimes education?
Yeah, it seems skewed.
Well, the left brain deals with things that are easier to measure, to quantify. Logic, analysis, the right brain's insights, those intuitive leaps, pattern recognition, they're harder to pin down.
Yeah.
But Sagan argues that true breakthroughs need that right brain spark, that ability to see connections logic might miss. Then the left brain can work out the details. Synergy is key.
So looking ahead, where did Sagan see intelligence going, the future evolution?
He made a really important distinction between somatic information stored in our bodies and our genes and brains and extrasomatic information.
Extrasomatic, meaning outside the body.
Exactly. Think libraries, books, computers, the internet, all that knowledge stored externally.
Okay.
And his point was biological evolution is slow, really slow. So the next major leap in intelligence wouldn't be us growing bigger brains necessarily. It would be technological.
Through this extrasomatic storage.
Yes. AI, computers.
Yeah.
Becoming indispensable partners, essentially extensions of our own minds, accelerating cultural evolution, the spread of knowledge way faster than biology ever could.
Right.
Our species' intelligence is already escaping the confines of our skulls, in a way.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot to digest. Let's try and pull out some key things. The first big one has to be, the brain is a layered evolutionary record.
Definitely. And that explains so much about why we humans are such paradoxes, right?
Right.
We can compose symphonies and engage in brutal tribal warfare, sublime art and primal ritual live side by side, because the brain structures for both are still there, still active.
Our internal struggles are just the sound of those different evolutionary clocks ticking at different speeds.
You'll put, okay, theme two, consciousness is a double-edged sword.
Right. That neocortex gives us foresight, lets us plan, build civilizations. But the flip side is anxiety. Knowing about the future means knowing about death.
And that underlying existential anxiety, Sagan suggests, is a huge driver of human culture. Think philosophy, religion, art. So much of it is trying to grapple with that knowledge, something the lizard brain never worried about.
Theme three feels important for humility, the continuity of life.
Yes. We aren't some separate magical creation. Our intelligence, amazing as it is an expansion, a development of cognitive abilities found all through the animal kingdom. We're not fallen angels. We're risen apes, as the saying goes.
Which really makes you rethink our relationship with other animals, our responsibilities.
It should. And tied to that is the final theme, culture as extended evolution, language, writing, technology. These let us pass on knowledge so rapidly now that it completely outstrips the pace of genetic change. Cultural evolution is how we adapt now, mostly.
Sagan's writing itself is just full of memorable lines that capture these huge ideas. We should touch on a few.
Oh, absolutely. His way with words was incredible. Maybe start with the most cosmic one. We are a way for the cosmos to know itself.
It's just profound, isn't it? All this matter and energy swirling around for billions of years, and eventually, through us, the universe develops the capacity to be aware of itself. We're cosmic consciousness, in a sense.
Beautifully put. Then there's the one that captures the core human dilemma. The price we paid for consciousness was a knowledge of mortality.
That hits hard. The ultimate trade-off. You get the power to shape your future, but you also get the knowledge that it eventually ends.
Mm-hmm. And finally, the ethical call to action. Our loyalties are to the species and the planet. We speak for Earth.
After explaining why we have these ancient, tribal, often irrational drives from the R complex, he basically says, okay, now use your neocortex, your reason, to override those instincts when they threaten our collective survival. We have to be smarter than our lizard brain.
It's a call for planetary maturity. So how can we actually use these ideas? Let's talk real-life applications. The triune brain model, even as a metaphor, is super useful for enhanced self-awareness.
Totally. Think about like road rage, that sudden, intense, totally irrational anger, or getting fiercely defensive about your territory online.
Right.
If you can pause and recognize, okay, that's my R complex flaring up. That's pure territorial instinct. It gives your neocortex a chance to step in. You can observe the feeling instead of just being the feeling. Make a choice.
Move from reaction to response. It's powerful. Yeah. And it changes how you approach problem solving and innovation, too.
How so?
Well, if you're stuck, maybe banging your head against a problem using only logic, Sagan's model reminds you to value the right hemisphere, too, that intuition, that pattern spotting ability. Sometimes you need to let the Dionysus side play around before Apollo can structure the solution. Don't just force the logic. Allow for creative insight.
That makes sense. And my personal favorite application, just fostering humility and perspective, remembering that cosmic calendar, that deadline stressing you out, that argument you had, it all happened in the last few seconds of the cosmic year. It doesn't dismiss your problems, but it puts them in this vast, almost awe-inspiring context. It can really dial down the stress.
Shrinks the small stuff.
Yeah.
So wrapping up, what's the biggest thing you took away or found most surprising?
For me, it's that connection between our deep brain structures and our myths. The idea that the Garden of Eden story might be like a cultural memory or metaphor for that massive neurological shift when the neocortex came online.
Huh?
That blew my mind. Science and myth reflecting each other. We really are risen apes wrestling with our past.
Yeah, that connection is powerful. My final takeaway is really about responsibility. Sagan shows us we are literally walking, talking evolutionary history. Our minds contain the whole journey. And because we have this new tool, the neocortex, with its capacity for reason and foresight and empathy, the responsibility is on us to use it wisely, to understand where we came from, to manage those internal conflicts, and hopefully secure a future.
Which leads perfectly into that final provocative thought you mentioned earlier about AI.
Right. If Sagan was right that the next big leap is extra-somatic technological intelligence, and we struggle so much to balance our own primal drives, our complex, with reason and empathy. Neocortex, limbic system.
How do we make sure the AI we build isn't just pure our complex logic, optimizing for some goal without any empathy or ethical consideration?
Exactly. How do we ensure the external intelligence we're creating reflects the best parts of our layered brain? The reason, the creativity, the empathy, and not just the cold, calculating, or even the primal dragon-like drives, that feels like the challenge for the next phase of evolution.
Definitely something to think about, a crucial question for our time.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.